What happens with this woman at the well? Well, the church tries to fill in the gaps and put things in order. You know, the church is like a grandmother. And why do I say that? Because grandmothers who often watch the grandchildren tell stories. And the church also tells stories. The church tells us stories which are called either the lives of the saints or events. It describes situations to put things together. If we might put in a contemporary idiomatic expression, the church connects the dots. Because in the lives of the saints, many times we have a dot here and there, and there's a gap, and the church tries to fill it. Many times in our understanding of the lives of the saints, we have misunderstandings, misconceptions, and sometimes misinformation. That's why it's necessary for us as the children of the church to examine things and look at things in a realistic manner, being honest, and of course recognizing the holiness of life, but also recognizing that we as humans record things. And sometimes we as humans make mistakes. Sometimes there's even a confusion in names, or there are misspellings. And one of my favorite examples is a great woman hymnographer. You all know her, and she is Saint Cassiani. Now, if you look at the manuscript tradition, I think there are about 8 or 10 spellings of her name. From Saint Cassia, Cassia, Icassia, Cassiani, Cassiani, and on down the line. So you see, those are human expressions and frailties. But on this day, we're going to at least look at the hymnological tradition of the church to try to better understand Saint Fotini, the woman at the well. Now, before I go any further, I need to do two things. First thing I have to do is to thank His Grace, Bishop Benjamin, who allowed me to be here. Because though I'm a hierarch and he's a hierarch, it's his diocese, his property. He's the boss. Well, he thinks he is. You know, that happens when one goes to monasteries. The bishop is the boss, but monastics have their own life and style. But he was gracious enough to give his blessing for me to be here. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if you have a question along the way, you should stop me. Because either you will forget what you wanted to ask, or I know I will probably forget. Or at least to ask you. So if you have a question, please ask. We're going to look and examine briefly the Vespers, maybe Matins, liturgy that is associated with this feast. At least today's feast. I did not go to the hymns of February for a very specific reason. We celebrated today the reading and the hymnological tradition of the woman at the well. And for those who were in church, hopefully you heard some of these things. Maybe you didn't. Because as you know, in the worldly parishes, in the communities, we do not do all of the readings. We do not read or chant the entire canon, even on Mount Athos at times. One has to look at the typikon for the day, the order of services. Hymnologically, the feast of Saint Fotini, the Samaritan woman, is not an ancient feast. And what do I mean by not an ancient feast? Well, the hymnographers don't really appear in the manuscript tradition until the 6th, 7th, 8th centuries. And we'll talk about them in a moment. When I say it's not an ancient feast, 6th, 7th centuries is a long time ago. But in the history of the church, that's a little bit late in some ways. The more ancient feasts of the church, even hymnologically, belong to either Christ, later, of course, the Virgin Mary, and the martyrs of the church. She is amongst the martyrs of the church. And as you know, she's also crowned with another special title, equal to the apostles. We have the issues, if you ever come up to the GTU, with gender. And of course, we Orthodox are always criticized that we have these problems we haven't overcome. We're caught in the past. Said, you should just read our hymnological tradition to see that we named these women equal to the apostles. Yes, sister?
I don't know what GTU.
Graduate Theological Union.
Oh, okay.
That is the consortium that gathers all the schools together. You need to pray for us. A little bit more for them than for us, because they need our prayers too. But actually, they're a fine bunch of people. And we've had several people who've become Orthodox over the years through from the GTU. I'm sorry, that's the type of question you should really stop me, because we use these expressions thinking everyone knows them, and no one does. So, she is named equal to the apostles. If one looks at the text strictly, the text today, we see that the texts this morning are a tapestry, sort of woven text, talking about different things. First and foremost, the issue or the main theme that is spoken of today is the resurrection. And that's for two reasons. It's Sunday. Secondly, we're in the period of the resurrection. So that is the primary theme. The secondary theme is that of mid-Pentecost. After mid-Pentecost, finally comes the feast or the celebration of the event that took place at the well. The woman who gave Christ water to drink. So we see at least in the Pentecostarion, the liturgical text or hymnological text for this period, she falls to number three. But that's not such a bad place, considering that we have Christ and the resurrection mid-Pentecost and then immediately this woman. And there are other feasts on this day according to the calendar date. And to show you that the Orthodox Church is not stagnant and we're not fixed in things, for the Church of Constantinople, the Patriarchate, the ecumenical throne, on this day, we also celebrate all the saintly hierarchs, archbishops and patriarchs, whoever served in the see of the ecumenical patriarchate. So we bring them all into a group, and they're also celebrated, which means that the church as a living organism continues to grow and expand. Let's look at the hymnological tradition. The hymns which are given to or written for and about Saint Fotini, as I told you, don't come until 6th, 7th, 8th centuries. And why is that? Well, it's a very practical reason. The golden age of hymnology is during that time period. Prior to that, things were much simpler. The services were not shorter, perhaps. They had a different dimension. And we have another great influence during this time, besides the hymnographers as individuals. And you know what that great influence is?
Iconography.
Not iconography, that secondary. The monastics, who are the great contributors to the liturgical tradition of the church. Especially in Constantinople, the monastery called Studion. And the Studites, such as Saint Theodore and others, are those who are responsible for editing, compiling the Triodion, for example. You may know that Saint Cassiani and St. Theodore the Studite even exchanged letters. She's a hymnographer, not only for the hymn we chant, of course, during Holy Week, but many other hymns as well. I think we have some 39 authentic hymns of hers, which we know. Think of how many have been lost. So either there or in Palestine, or the monastery of St. Savas, which is quite famous. But we have a movement, sort of, that people leave either Antioch, Damascus, those areas, and go to Constantinople. But no matter where they go, it is during this time period that hymnology flourishes. And that is because we have the canon, which has been established. Or we have the Kondakion and various other aspects. And if you look at the hymns of Saint Fotini, there are really three major contributors. First is John the Monk, who is really John of Damascus. And that tells you exactly where he's located. He's usually known, of course, for some of the great hymns, such as those of the funeral service, or his discourses on the icons, the sacred images. He's one of the great defenders. But he's also the one who wrote the hymns for the resurrection, which we chant Saturday evening and other times. There is Joseph of Thessalonica. He was from Constantinople, and he moved on to become Archbishop of Thessaloniki. One somewhere 7th, 8th century, one in the 9th century. And then comes someone very beloved and dear to me, St. Romanos, the melodist, the great poet of Christian tradition. And then there are some other ones who are just lost in time. Their names were never recorded. We don't know who they are. But certainly there were others who contributed to the situation. Yes?
Sometimes, as I understand, there's a tradition that, for instance, they say St. John Chrysostom, we have a liturgy of St. John Chrysostom, but it might not have all been composed by him, but it was in the tradition of him.
The liturgy which we have today, and we call the liturgy of St. John Chrysostom, is not his. And I can prove it to you historically. All you have to do is go to the hymn which we chant, Only Begotten Son, which is chanted during the liturgy, was written centuries after him.
Right, so in the tradition, and that's my question, is that of these, for instance, St. John of Damascus or Romanos, do we find the same thing, or would all of these be produced by them?
We know, for example, many of the Kondakia of St. Romanos are produced solely by him. And you can tell by language, by style, things like that, manuscript traditions and whatever. For the canons, a good portion of them are produced by St. John of Damascus. The good portion, they may have been refined by others. You know, and let me just give you another quick thing so I can tell you how the church grows and changes and how we move things. Let's go to Holy Thursday evening. Now, if you're in the Greek tradition, after the fifth gospel reading, the priest takes the crucifix, all the lights go off in the church, and he carries it in procession through the church to the center. That's been adapted and taken on by others. That doesn't appear in the church until the year 1864. Holy Friday evening, okay? We chant the hymn, Kimati Thalassis, the waves of the sea. It is the canon for Holy Saturday morning, correct? That's written by St. Cassiani. At least the initial irmos, the verse. And the rest of the hymns, which we call the lamentations, the engomia, whatever, don't enter the triodion until at least the 14th century. So it shows you the church is always adding. We're not stagnant like some people think. And we always say we've never changed anything. We haven't changed our theology. We've changed our expressing it, our way of bringing it to the people.